Hello, everyone. Just a quick word before we get started with this week's episode. We want to tell you that we're putting on a show in conjunction with the Everett Music Initiative up in Everett, Washington, at the Anchor Pub on April 20th. Yeah, that's right, 4/20. Awesome, right? You like how I just left a little space for you to just think about it just for a second? It's going to be a great show. The Young Evils are going to be there, as well as the Learning Team. So come on up, 4/20 at the Anchor Pub in Everett. All right, on with the show. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 143. It was now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden. And this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Welcome, everyone. Oh, my God. I've got a great story for you. Coming up here in just one moment. But before we do that, let's see. Wow, lost my train of thought right as the show started. We've got a great show planned for you today, regardless. John Totten of the band The Quiet Ones is going to be joining me here in the dining room studios. Shortly, they've got a new album out called Molt in Moments that is now available. So go to their website and check them. We'll have everything linked up on our webpage, www.air-raid.net. So just go over there and, click the links. Be good. Be good. It'll be great. It will work. And you will have yourself some brand spanking new music by the band The Quiet Ones. I had the opportunity to go and see them play live last Thursday for their CD release, and totally blown away by their live show. Excellent band, you guys. So if you have the chance to see them play on the road, go do that as well, because, man, this band's going to be doing stuff. This band's definitely going to be doing stuff. I was super, super impressed. And can't get enough of this new album, Molten Moments. It's much different than their older stuff, than their previous records. But I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Okay. Oh, man. All right. So, yeah. I went and saw Jerry Lewis last night at the Emerald Queen Casino in Tacoma, Washington. For those of you who don't know, are not from our beautiful state here on the West Coast. It's in a city south of Seattle, and it's kind of one of those, I don't know. It's a shitty casino. It is a shitty casino. It's like a long hallway, basically, is what the whole thing is. And it's just kind of, I don't know, it just kind of seems run down a little bit. Have you guys noticed that? Any of you who may live around these parts and frequent that casino, it seems run down. Anyway, my friend Luke, my other friend Thunder, we were talking a couple months ago about going to see Jerry Lewis when he came into Seattle, because he's a legend. Why wouldn't we go and see Jerry Lewis? You guys would go, right? So we're talking about getting tickets. Now, the reason I wanted to go was because I figured that we would go and see this guy do his act, and he would get off on some insane tangent, right? He would probably say some, like, super anti-Semitic remarks, maybe some racist stuff, definitely some sexist things. And I just wanted to see that for myself because, one, it's uncomfortable. Two, it's hilarious because he's super old. He's 87 years old. And three, he's not going to be around much longer. Now, what we got from going there was something much different. It was much more uncomfortable. And basically what we witnessed was the, you know, first signs of dementia in this man, Jerry Lewis. I don't know, you know, of course, I don't know if it's officially dementia, but I'll just give you guys an example. Now, he was up on stage when he came out. I was actually initially impressed because he had some stuff together and he was getting some laughs. People were excited. It was good. The sound wasn't that great. The sound, he had this big band that was backing him and stuff, and the sound wasn't that great in the back of the room where we were all sitting. But but anyway, regardless, Jerry Lewis came out, and he started doing his thing. And it was great. It was good. But then things started to slip a little bit. You could notice he was kind of forgetting stuff, but you couldn't really tell quite yet at the beginning of the show whether or not that was... that may have been planned or something along those lines. Like it was part of the bit. But then it started happening more and more, and it was ramping up because he would be in the middle of a story and it would switch. The story would switch and he would start talking about something else, or he would change like the characters the characters in these jokes. Jerry Lewis is famous for doing one-liners. Then he would like something would always switch. Like the joke was supposed to be about two Jewish men. Now it's about him and a wife that's in a hospital. And it was like once we all started seeing that happen up there, you know, the crowd would kind of there was a lot of uncomfortable laughter going on. People were looking at each other like, whoa. It was intense, man. It was intense. I was sinking down in my chair. I was biting through my cup that I had some scotch in. I literally bit through the top of this cup because I was so riddled with anxiety over what I was watching unfold on stage. It was intense. We saw a listener at one point in the show. They started taking questions. Jerry Lewis started taking questions, which was a bad idea in the first place. Many of the questions were, you know, just flat-out statements. And some of them were even asking him if he would autograph something or if they could take a picture with him. listener Ren to the Air Raid podcast, we saw him there. And he asked a question of Jerry Lee Lewis. I can't remember what his question was, but anyway, Jerry Lewis like really just kind of was like, told him to get away from the mic, take his face away from the mic because he was too close. And then kind of made fun of listener Ren right in front of the whole thing. Oh, it was weird. It was really weird. Super, super weird. But one good thing of last night, was that when I showed up to the Emerald Queen Casino, met up with my buddy Luke Burbank, and we hung out with Steve Wilson and Pat Cashman for a little while, talking to them. That was awesome. That was such a treat. They were both integral parts of the show Almost Live back in the day here in Seattle, which you may remember from the 90s. I think it was nationally syndicated. It might have been on Comedy. I think it was on Comedy Central for a little while. Great show, though. And two fantastic dudes. They were going to see Jerry Lewis as well. And then as we're walking up and we're going to get some drinks, there's Eddie Vedder of Pearl Jam hanging out in the high roller section of the card room. I did not go up and talk to Eddie Vedder. But I did make eye contact with him, so there's that. And he was there to see the Jerry Lewis show as well. And I kind of wanted, like, throughout the show, we left early, by the way, because none of us could really just stand being in there anymore. But I wish they would have kind of panned the camera around and shown the look on Eddie Vedder's face at some point during the show. I wanted to see how he was reacting to that. Oh, boy. All right. Well, hey, let's get to this, shall we? Hey, come to the show 420 up at the Anchor Pub in Everett, The Young Evils. It's going to be great. We're sponsoring this show in conjunction with the Everett Music Initiative. It's going to be awesome. $7 in advance, $10 at the door. We're going to have a great time. All right. This song, new song, The Quiet Ones, off of their new album, Molten Moments. It's called EKG, and we will be back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with John Totten. Be right back, everybody. All right, welcome back. Welcome back to the Dining Room Studios. That was the song EKG by The Quiet Ones. And joining me here is John Totten, the singer, songwriter
all, of The Quiet
all
Ones.
Of the above. All of the above?
Yeah.
That mic just a little bit closer to your face hole there, buddy. Well, welcome, sir. Thank you for coming on this hungover day in North Seattle.
Thanks for
having
me.
I appreciate it. Did you have to travel far?
I didn't. It was I live on the Finney Ridge side of Ballard. So.
Oh, perfect, man.
Yeah, it was right.
We can
there.
Hang out.
Totally.
You realize that, right?
I mean, I meant to say I actually live in Federal Way.
Nice try. Nice try. One of the reasons why I give people my phone number in the emails when I set this up is that hopefully they'll call me when they get here. And then I have their phone number, and I can drunk dial them when I'm lonely.
Well, I didn't.
So you didn't do that.
I didn't do
so
that.
So before you leave, you're going to have to give me your phone number.
That's fine.
Just to make sure we have all of our T's crossed.
555.
Well, welcome, sir. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
The new album is called Molten Moments, and it comes out on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
This episode will drop on the following Sunday, so shits.
They can go to iTunes right now while they're listening to
it. While they're listening to this and download this. I've actually already, because we featured some of your songs from the older album on a on an episode a little while ago.
Awesome.
I think it was with Eddie Pepitone.
My Uncle Larry will be so proud.
Yeah, I think, well, don't hold me to that. But I think it was the Eddie Pepitone one. But and we've been getting a whole bunch of emails from our listeners saying that they have gone and checked you guys out and really dig it. So,
that's great.
Have you noticed a bump in sales?
No.
No?
No. I mean, it's kind of the way it works. You get like a monthly report. So maybe
maybe it's
in the mail.
Well, now I feel shitty because maybe they're just lying.
What's the word? You know, they downloaded it illegally.
BitTorrented it. Man, that's bullshit. Support this guy, will you? Support his drug habits.
It's okay. We'll be fine.
Well, welcome, sir. Thank you again so much for coming. Mm-hmm. And the new album, Molten Moments, is fantastic.
Thank you.
I've been listening to it a lot since you sent it to me. it's a little darker than your earlier stuff.
It is.
Yeah. And now you sent along this whole press package. There's mm-hmm. there's a little card kind of mm-hmm. explaining the album a little bit, and you go into some stuff about when you were writing this album, this newest album.
Yeah.
Or when you guys, the band, mm-hmm. the royal you,
yeah,
were working on this album. So it sounds like there was some shit hitting the fan at that time.
Yeah, things got weird.
Things got weird.
I'm 30 now and I started writing these songs.
So you're old.
Yeah. I'm way past my prime of being cool. And part of that was just you know, if you've listened to the older Quiet Ones albums, it's a lot of songs about girls and mm-hmm. happy stuff. And
yeah, it's a bit more poppy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was around the time things were changing. Mm-hmm. And the weird part was I started noticing like my heart stopping every day for a couple times every day.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, like palpitations almost or something?
Yeah.
Or like,
and anybody who has that, I mean, it's a pretty common thing. My right. life was never in imminent danger.
Uh-huh.
But anybody who has those experiences knows that you never really get used to it.
Right, right. It always kind of takes you back a little bit.
Right.
I've experienced that before.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's almost like a real quick out of body experience.
It is.
Right?
Yeah. You're not supposed to be aware of your own heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And when you are made to be aware of it, it's startling,
yeah.
to say the least.
Yeah.
So, you know, long story short, I got it checked out and it's been checked out by plenty of doctors and they kind of mm-hmm. all say the same thing, you know, well, you're not dead yet.
Uh huh. But it's something that they need to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, not really. I don't know. I mean, I go on like message boards and stuff and there's people who are like 75 and who are like, yeah, I've had this for 50 years and I'm still alive and
yeah,
I'm not going to die from it. But all that to say, you know, I kind of became hyper aware of the fact that my body and my mind kind of peaked at the age of 25.
mm-hmm.
And that everything from here on out was kind of deterioration. And that was like this weird existential kind of just shocker.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started noticing that when I was writing songs a lot more, they would be less about, you know, girls and more about, you know, what it's going to be like to die. What it's going to be like to not be around my brothers anymore,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
Or, you know, kind of bigger stuff. And so
you made a conscious decision to kind of change what you were writing about.
I don't think it was conscious.
No,
it just kind of started coming out like that way.
Really?
I noticed it while it was happening, and that was another change that was hard to go through too. It's like artistically my identity was kind of shifting, and it was, you know, I would go through writer's block because of it. And
yeah, yeah.
And I wasn't writing the really catchy 3-minute songs that were coming out of me in 5 minutes tops,
right,
that
right.
I was before.
Yeah,
all the
yeah.
songs on Better Walk Than Ride like that probably yeah. were written in under 10 minutes.
Well, there's still an element of pop to this album.
Sure.
I mean, some of the, you know, like the one we just listened to, EKG, mm-hmm. the first song on the album is, you know, it's a little, the music is lighthearted, but the subject matter might not be, you know,
yeah.
with the lyrics. So, but I think it goes really well. They kind of play off of each other a little bit.
I hope so.
Yeah, yeah. And I notice a lot of influences from, especially listening to you guys' older stuff,
mm-hmm.
From like Pavement and Sonic Youth and
yeah,
and Flaming Lips.
Yeah,
in there.
That's always been all those bands are really important to me.
Yeah.
And it's always been something that I've tried to reconcile, you know, like with the poppier stuff as well. How do we kind of equally represent our influences that are more kind of 90s dissonant
mm-hmm.
with the stuff that is, you know, 60s popish kind of, you know, I would say I probably listen to an equal amount of Sonic Youth and the Beatles.
Yeah, yeah.
And where do those two collide?
Were you a fan of their latest album, Rather Ripped?
That wasn't their latest album.
Oh, it wasn't?
But yes, I'm a fan of all of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I actually
I haven't heard that last
good.
One.
I actually kind of my relationship with like the music of the 90s and my teenage years is kind of interesting because I kind of I owned it all in middle school and high school, but I kind of like owned it because it was cool. And I even remember going to see Sonic Youth. And I owned Daydream Nation. And this was in 2000 or 2001. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been from Murray Street.
Right.
And I was just kind of waiting for them to play Teenage Riot so I could say that I saw that.
Right, right.
And I didn't really appreciate it until much later on. And then when that 2000 stuff started coming out, I got back into it because of the Jim O'Rourke connection.
Right, right.
Jim O'Rourke, who I loved his solo catalog for Drag City, and he also was involved with Wilco and Joanna Newsom and a lot of really good stuff. And so when I found out that he was a member of Sonic Youth, I was like, maybe I should
get back into that, see what's going on.
Yeah. So it was like the 2000 stuff, like Murray Street and Rather Ripped.
I kind of lost touch after what was the Washing Machine album or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't, I think it was just Washing Machine, right?
Yeah, it was
Washing Machine. I totally kind of dropped off.
Yeah.
After that, I did not like that album.
Yeah, I kind of appreciate their 80s stuff more.
Yeah, and you know, I would still, that was the first big concert I ever went to was Sonic Youth. And they still, you know, to this day, I pop in Dirty or Goo, you know, every once in a while and catch up with my teenage years.
Yeah, I just actually, the best show of the year so far for me, I just saw Chelsea Light Moving, Thurston's new band.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I saw them at New Moon's last week.
They're basically like good 90s Sonic Youth.
It sounds like Psychedelic Hearts, his first solo record.
Uh-huh.
It sounds just like that, and it's really good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, that's one of the like the solo acts that I can really appreciate, because a lot of the times if somebody goes solo and they've been in a band for years and years, it just ends up their solo act sounds the same as their old band, right?
Right.
That's usually the case. But with him, with Thurston Moore, like, I don't give a shit. Like, bring me more of that stuff. Like, well, I will consume the crap out of that. And like Stephen Malkmus. Like Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks, like they're what was that? Oh man, what was that album?
My favorite is Real Emotional Trash.
Real Emotional Trash. Yeah, that's
the one before the new one.
Yeah, and I mean that's like a super awesome Pavement record.
It is.
You know,
mixed with like if he had been like listening to Santana a lot more. Or right. Like that.
Yeah. Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's say, God, we kind of started this whole thing. in a place where I wanted to take it in the second half of the show, you know, we got it out of the way. We got it out of the way. But so let's go back. Let's talk about you, John. Let's where are you from? You are a Seattle transplant, true?
I am. Yeah. I grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Why?
Why did I grow up there?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've heard of.
I'm just gonna ask you one word questions from here on out.
That's fine. I'm sure you've heard of the Trail of Tears.
Yeah.
So the Cherokee Trail of Tears started in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And when they were kind of rounded up by all the white people and forced to move out to the, you know, the breadbasket of America.
So we're going way back here.
I'm going to tell you why I was born in Chattanooga, Tennessee. When they left, they put a curse on Chattanooga. And the curse was that any white man born in Chattanooga, Tennessee would return to Chattanooga, Tennessee before he died. He wouldn't die elsewhere. And so, my dad, who was born in Chattanooga, Tennessee, he moved away for a while and he was going to be a rock star. And so he decided, like all people who want to be rock stars, to move to Des Moines, Iowa. And,
the hotbed of rock music.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my mom, who grew up in Chicago, was in college in Des Moines and they met, and then as per the curse, moved back to Chattanooga, Tennessee.
That's where great.
Me and my two brothers were born.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, so you're 30 years old.
Yeah.
Are you the oldest?
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your dad was musical.
Yeah.
So you grew up in a musical household.
Yeah, my mom was an artist and my dad was a musician.
That's pretty cool. So were they kind of like hippie kind of parents or what?
In a way, do you know the Jesus Freak movement?
Mm-hmm.
Like Christian hippies?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So you grew up in a religious household as well.
Indeed.
Yeah. Not part of a cult?
Not part of a cult. It's kind of an interesting religious background. My dad grew up, vaguely evangelical, and my mom was a Jew from Chicago, and then she converted to Christianity long before I was born.
Really?
Met my dad at church. And so I was raised in this kind of Presbyterian household with
lots of long hair and beards.
With the knowledge that at least half of me was culturally and ethnically Jewish, but not religiously.
Right, right.
So
you had one more step closer to Jesus than everybody else did.
He was just right there all the time.
So tell me about that style of life then, growing up. If you, looking back on it now, was it kind of a crazy lifestyle that your parents were raising you in?
Yeah, crazy. Not in. There wasn't any. It was. What's the word? Is milquetoast a word? Am I pronouncing it right?
Milquetoast.
Yeah. It was kind of blah. It was crazy and.
I think the term you're searching for is vanilla.
Vanilla.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it was crazy in that. I knew that there was like something bigger out there.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that this wasn't that, and all due respect to my dad, who I love, that I wasn't going to end up, working in a furniture store, drinking a six pack of, Bud Light every night and kind of watching TV and going to bed and doing it again the next day.
Right. Right.
So, That was kind of like the impending thing that hung over me and all of my friends throughout middle school and high school as we got into cool music and cool art and everything was just like, what are we going to do that's bigger?
Mm-hmm.
And most of us.
So you weren't deterred? Your dad didn't try to deter you from following your musical musical goals?
No, they were both really supportive. They split up when we were teenagers and remarried, and everybody's been really supportive. There's always that conversation of, hey, do you know you could be a lawyer and also work with musicians?
Mm-hmm.
And I would just kind of, cause I went to college and I majored in music. I kind of knew from an early age that it was something that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went to college and started this, spending money on this music degree, they were always like, you could get this music degree and go to law school and be an entertainment lawyer.
Right. Why don't you start your own record label?
I have.
Have you?
Yeah. I mean,
that's how you're putting these things out then. Huh?
Yeah. As of now, all the Quiet Ones albums have been on In Advance Records. My first band, before the Quiet Ones in college, we were on that record label. That's when I started it. My brother Chris has a band called The Exploding High Fives. They're on that record label.
Oh, cool.
And then I have a solo record, that we put out. LP on that record label. All funded by me.
Well, let's talk about that in just a second. Sure. But I want to get back to this getting out of Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Yeah.
So your dad obviously is trying to put the seed in your mind that there's other things that you can do with music.
Right.
But you are intent on being more on the musical side of things. Right.
Yeah, I think maybe that's more. I would say he never even put the seed in there. It was more of like, it was. I'm. It's much more benign than I'm making it sound. He's always been really supportive.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there was also, where I come from, I could call my parents and tell them all about the artistic endeavors, and they're still going to be proud of me based on whether I can pay my bills or not.
Right.
And,
right.
So,
well, of course any good parent would be right.
Right. Right.
I would hope so anyway.
So, I mean, that stuff is not so important to them as it is that I'm, financially, stable and, I have great parents in terms of, I've never once gotten the question, when are you going to settle down? When are you going to get married?
Yeah.
I've never I've never felt pressure to give them grandchildren. So in that respect, I could have it a lot worse. I have pretty good parents in that respect. But there was kind of that silent narrative in the background of, you could do this too.
right. Yeah.
And there was a little bit of a Jewish accent there. Yeah, it's a funny question. You could always be a lawyer.
That's pretty great. So what kind of music did your parents kind of, what were they listening to in the house when you were growing up, you and your brothers?
It was a wild mix of, like contemporary Christian music.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were like the oldies station. So I grew up with a lot of like Beatles, and my dad took me to get my first compact disc in like 89. And
nice.
It was Meet the Beatles. And then there was also like, I remember a lot of like kind of smooth rock, like from the late 70s and early 80s. Like I remember like one of the jokes, like whenever me and my brothers kind of imitate my dad singing, it sounds like Michael McDonald. Like,
yeah.
We had a lot of like Doobie Brothers.
That's
and Michael
awesome
McDonald
though.
And you know, every time we sing like that.
Oh yeah.
He sings like this. And that's how he sings.
I love popping in Michael McDonald now and again. You know, it's just like that to me is like the epitome of feeling like you're in the 80s again.
Yeah. Like, and this might out my hipsterness, but you know, I've crossed that point with Michael McDonald from like,
right.
where ironic becomes sincere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
and nostalgic.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, I don't know what it is, but as I get older, I like kind of seek that kind of thing, that feeling out, you know,
yeah,
every once in a while. Yeah. And every time I'm like listening to that and I'm driving in my car or something, you know, and I'm like listening to some solid yacht rock.
Mm-hmm.
I get instantly transported to my hometown, you know, running around my hometown in my underwear because I was five.
Exactly.
You know, so I love that stuff.
Me too.
I love that stuff. Yeah. Let's do this, man. Let's go to our second musical break. We're featuring music off of the new album, the new Quiet Ones album, Molt in Moments. This song is called Power in the Blood, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us with John Totten of The Quiet Ones. All right, be back in a moment.
It was true. We'll be right back.
right, we are back. That was the Power in the Blood. Or wait, Power in the Blood, not yeah. The Power in the Blood. Whatever.
It doesn't matter.
Right? Yeah. We're back in the dining room studios on a beautiful Saturday afternoon here in North Seattle. John Totten joining us from the Quiet Ones. Their new album, Molt in Moments, comes out. It's out. It's out now. We're speaking future.
Yes.
I always see this.
It came out 3 days ago.
This is why I should be used to this by now. You'd think, you know, doing episodes, recording things early and then putting them out in the future.
If we want to talk about something that's coming out, though, the vinyl, limited edition vinyl,
yes,
will be in record stores in Seattle on 420.
420.
Record store day.
Yeah. That's record store day.
It is record store day.
Awesome. 420 is also, we've got to say this as well. Thank you for reminding me, sir. Mm-hmm. We've got a show coming up with the Young Evils up at the Anchor Pub in Everett. We are doing this in conjunction with the Everett Music Initiative, and it's going to be a lot of fun. The Young Evils will be headlining the show. Also, we've got the Learning Team are going to be there, and it's going to be great, guys. And I think it's seven. I'm trying to pull this stuff up on my phone right now, but then I just realized that it's on airplane mode, so I'm screwed.
The Young Evils, who we just played with a few days ago.
Yes, yes. You see, you just jumped in your hot tub time machine.
Yeah,
and you've got this down. Mm-hmm. You want to just host this?
Sure.
Sure. Okay.
Let me interview you.
Right. Nobody wants to know about me.
Well,
they just know. They just want to know about you, John. But come 4:20, John. You gonna come? You can come up to Everett?
I'll actually be out of town.
Oh.
But.
You guys going on tour?
No. I'll be on just a personal trip.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to go to Port Townsend and get some time away.
There you go.
But there's a record store there, though, and I really want to be the only person in Port Townsend who's celebrating Record Store Day. There's a few records that I know I'm not going to get my hands on if I try elsewhere. So.
That's great. My parents used to drag me to Port Townsend all the time. I grew up over on the Kitsap Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go. My parents were very into antiques.
Hmm.
And Port Townsend has a huge number of antique stores over there. Well, they used to.
Did you use it as a verb? Did you go
antiquing?
Oh,
yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah.
So you would summer in Port Townsend and go antiquing too?
We wouldn't summer. It was just like a weekend thing. Like sometimes we would have to go. But it kind of started working out in our favor because both my brother and I got really into like army surplus stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's always like these army surplus stores over there that you could go to and get helmets and things like
that's
that.
Awesome.
But I remember walking into one antique store in particular, and it was like a tri-level thing. And you could go in the basement. They had this whole like glass display case full of like old army surplus stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like they even had a pistol in there, like an officer's pistol, and they had a human foot.
What?
A severed foot.
A surplus foot. There's somebody who had too many feet.
Right.
There was a surplus.
There was a surplus in the army. They had way too many feet on the ground. But no, it was a foot. I think it was from like a soldier in Vietnam. Like, and it was just bones.
Were you supposed to, like, wear it around your neck for good luck?
Yeah. It was attached to a necklace.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I'm sure your parents are very nice people, but you can tell them that I said antique is not a verb.
Right. Yeah. They don't do it anymore, so
okay.
So they wouldn't
good.
Be offended.
Good.
They wouldn't be offended. God, where were we?
I don't know.
So you grew up over in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
With some hippie Jesus freak parents.
Sure.
When did you make the move out here to Seattle?
I moved out here with my brothers in late 2005.
Yeah.
I spent some time in Missoula, Montana before.
Oh, really?
Is
that where you went to school or?
No, it's a long story. We've got
nothing but time here.
I was in a relationship that kind of took me everywhere.
Oh, really?
And she went to school out there,
mm-hmm.
and I met a lot of people out there, and that's where we started kind of playing out as a band, and we're playing there. Well, as of today, we played there last night, and
see, you're really good at that.
Yeah, and and we had a great time. We had a great time last night, and they always treat us well in Missoula.
Like where are you playing in Missoula?
at the where we
Where did you play?
We played at the Palace last night, is part of this complex underneath the Badlander, and they're just great people. We know a lot of people there. Actually, the owner or the former late owner of that building, his name was Aaron Bolton. He passed away last year. He was a member of our band for one show.
Oh, really?
But this album is dedicated to his memory. Great guy, great people in Missoula, and we love going there. So
it's a good place.
Yeah, we were there. We lived there for a short time and made a lot of valuable friends there. So
awesome. Yeah. That's great. So what? So the girl.
Yeah.
What happened there?
We
no longer together. I'm guessing.
We were together for a long time, and then we weren't, and and now we're friends, and that's the story.
Enough said.
Yeah, she's okay. In a band. I'm in a band. Yeah. She lives somewhere in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest.
Okay,
not in Seattle, but her band is really great, and we have fun making fun of things via email, and that's kind of the
that's kind
of our relationship.
That's kind
of
it.
Yeah.
So, do you still go to church? You still practice religion?
Not really. No.
No?
I
did you lose faith?
No, you know what? I think my faith shifted. I think I realized at a certain point that my faith was, always kind of humanistic, and that, the parts of Judaism and Christianity that I valued were the parts that kind of got lost in institutionalized religion. The parts where, you know, humanity is created in the image of God, and if you go back and look at the original language, it actually says that we're little idols of God walking around, just the part that places a lot of honor and dignity in being human isn't really around institutionalized religion anymore.
Yeah,
and so I think it just kind of shifted to where I grew up in this kind of culture that was you put your faith and trust in God, and anything left over you can kind of give to humanity, and it kind of reversed where I put my faith and trust in humanity, and anything left over I can kind of give to God. And I'm more interested in humanity and what that can teach me about theology or spirituality than I am.
Was there any one thing that made you shift and your thought about it?
Yeah, I think a lot of it had to do with sexuality and identity.
Really?
And the way religion treats those categories. And, you know, I remember even being in Tennessee and, like, realizing the first time I realized that one of my friends was gay, and my reaction being at first kind of grossed out by it. And this is, like, when I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And then the realization that he hadn't told me because he knew I would be disappointed. And how that just kind of jarred me in a way that I wasn't ready for. The fact that he didn't feel like he could be honest with me.
Right.
Because
right.
of how he knew I would react. And that I was reinforcing that suspicion of his in my own reflection on it. And that kind of started this process that, I mean, went on for years of questioning how functional religion really was and being in a relationship with people. And I came to the conclusion that it wasn't very functional. That it doesn't mean that I'm an atheist or that I don't believe in something. It just means that as a functional person in a relationship, it didn't really have a lot to do with how I was with my friends and my loved ones.
So. Yeah. Yeah. What was the thought from your parents on that?
I don't know if we've had,
were they supportive of your,
I don't
of
think
your shift?
I don't think we've ever talked about it.
Really?
Yeah.
It's something, cause I take it they're still relatively, relatively religious.
Yeah. And you know what? I think they've kind of progressed as me and my brothers have progressed and, you know,
so it's kind of a non-issue, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that they worry about me dying and going to hell. A lot of it, and especially coming from that Southern evangelical world, a lot of it kind of goes through the intersection of politics.
Right.
I mean, that is kind of the way that a lot of our personal identity issues and religious issues get worked out is in political discussions.
Yeah.
And they definitely know that I differ with them politically. And I think that they can draw the conclusions that represents themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have those discussions and those, you know,
Are you guys on opposite ends of the spectrum, politically?
Yeah.
You are?
About as much as you can get.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that surprises me. When you were talking about your parents and how, you know, religion fit into your childhood and, mm-hmm. and growing up, it sounded to me like they were much more progressive, on the progressive side of things.
It's, you know, it's really a hard thing to explain, and I don't want this to sound condescending. It's a really hard thing to explain for someone who hasn't grown up in the South. Mm-hmm. That in a lot of ways there was progression, you know, in a lot of ways my parents wanted me to be culturally sensitive. You know, they would make sure that I had experiences in the African American community and that mm-hmm. we would go to African American churches and that I was not necessarily cut off culturally. And then, you know, I've seen my dad in relationship with people who are LGBT, and I've seen that he really does not treat them differently.
Right.
And that it's a hard thing for people, I think, in Seattle to understand that there are people who out there who think that it is wrong, and yet their functional relationships don't look differently.
Right, right.
So in a lot of ways, you know, my parents were never the ones saying that they were never going around saying that gay people were going to hell. They were never saying that I should treat gay people differently. They were never saying that they were never racist really in any way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in as much as that we all are inherently. Yeah. But then in a lot of ways, politically, there is not a lot of progression, and it is kind of a kind of typical hippie story to kind of become what you were rebelling against
in the first
place. And I think, and I see that happen with people my age.
Well, you grow up and you realize that, you know, things aren't that simple.
Sure.
Right?
And I remember in my early 20s, you know, a lot of people in my cohort were our main thing was community and just, you know, it was very hippie-ish itself. You know, we wanted to all live in the same houses and grow food, and as those people get careers and families and buy houses and stuff, you kind of see it kind of slipping away
from that
kind of idealism that you experienced as a kid. So,
well, you got to pay for stuff.
Exactly. Exactly.
that's what it always comes down to, right?
It is. That's exactly what it is.
You own a house, you gotta make sure it still stays standing, you know?
Yes.
You touched on something there that kind of has been on my mind for a little while.
Sure.
Is that the disconnect between people who live here in the Pacific Northwest and kind of, you know, a little bit of the rest of the country
mm-hmm.
is pretty far and wide, right?
Yeah.
Like not only politically, but just how we kind of take on, you know, God, what am I trying to say here? Trying to make this as concise as possible so I don't start rambling, but usually that's kind of a problem. But so what are your thoughts on how people here in Seattle, being from the South,
mm-hmm.
how people here in Seattle kind of view politics in the South?
Yeah. It's kind of all over the place. I've had mm-hmm. experiences where people find out that I'm from Tennessee and they just assume that I am a, you know, racist, you know, country bumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
And, I have people who are surprised to find out that I can articulate some kind of political views. I've had, you know, there are people who are surprised to find out that I am as bleeding heart liberal as I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
definitely thought you were racist.
Well, that's because I'm wearing a Confederate flag T-shirt. I'm not, by the way.
No.
It's kind of all over the place, and I've, you know, there are a lot of transplants here too.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot of Southerners here, and so I've,
Well, Seattle's chock full of them. But like one thing that kind of annoys me mm-hmm. about, I don't know, I want to say, you know, Seattle, for lack of a better term, Seattle liberalism,
mm-hmm.
is that they don't take into account that people, you know, that live elsewhere may have different views than you, but that right. doesn't make them a bad person, right? Right. It just may make them a little bit, you know, less educated on the subject
right.
matter. Doesn't mean they're stupid. But I think a lot of people in this area kind of take a very dim view of people with other, you know, views on subjects like, you know, homosexuality,
sure.
Marriage equality, mm-hmm. You know, things like that. So,
yeah,
I don't know, living in both places. I just wondered if you had.
Yeah, I'll describe it this way. I've experienced fundamentalism on both sides,
right.
having lived
yeah.
in both different places. Yeah. I remember I worked at Easy Street in West Seattle for years, and every Sunday there would be people out on the corner of the junction protesting the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember sitting there thinking, like, who is their message to?
Right.
Everybody here agrees with them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was that kind of like fundamentalist kind of, you know, even though we disagree with the Iraq War and that we think, you know, we're brought there by a fucking lie. Who are these people speaking to in West Seattle? You
mm-hmm.
know, what,
yeah.
How effective is this? And in the same way, I have plenty of friends in the South, and though I disagree with them, vehemently, who believe that homosexuality is a sin, most of them will say that gay people should be able to get married to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a nuance that you find in every region, in every culture, that you can't really know unless you go there.
Right. So, right. Yeah. I like that.
Thanks.
Sorry it took me so long to ask you a very simple question.
No, that's okay. I love getting in political discussions. I wasn't expecting to get one today, but
right.
I'll go for hours on the subject.
So back to the subject at hand, moving out to Seattle after where? Missoula?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Was it the music scene that brought you here?
Yeah. You know, I had visited out here before mm-hmm. because of my Missoula connections and I always wanted to visit. I mean, when I was a kid in seventh grade, I had posters of Pearl Jam playing their famous Gasworks free concert. And
mm-hmm.
so I kind of grew up in the 90s with this like romantic view of this place and watched,
right.
you know,
I think most people did. Yeah.
Yeah. And I watched The Real World and saw all these images and it was just kind of presented as this like tropical place, always in the summertime.
It was like what was that? American Tale? Like
yeah.
the streets are paved with cheese.
Yeah.
Here in Seattle.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, growing up in the Southeast, a popular vacation destination was always the Caribbean. I grew up going to vacations in Puerto Rico and Jamaica and
mm-hmm.
the Virgin Islands and I love that place. And
yeah.
The first time I came out here was in the summer, and I remember I drove from Missoula, and I remember coming over the hill in I-90, like right around Mercer Island, and seeing this like spot where like the kind of it looked like villas going down into the ocean, and like reminded me so much of my trips to the Caribbean, and it was just beautiful. I mean, mm-hmm. I came out here for like a few days, and there wasn't a cloud in the sky,
and you could see the mountains, the Olympic mountains,
and
in the background.
It was amazing, and I was, you know. Growing up where I grew up, there's these rolling kind of Appalachian mountains, but mm-hmm. you don't see snow-covered mountains. I mean, I realize that where I grew up in this neighborhood called Lookout Mountain, where there was a famous Civil War battle fought there, and I always thought that was a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Lookout Mountain was a mountain.
Yeah.
And when I came out here, I was like, I don't know mountains. And so it was just this amazing place. And
yeah.
I had visited out here, and so I knew that I wanted to move to a bigger city.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I kind of wanted to get out of the South, and so I was thinking about Chicago or Seattle, having friends and relatives in Chicago and a few friends out here. And my visit out here is what kind of changed my mind.
Yeah. So did you just kind of, you know, pitch your tent?
Yeah,
when you first visited, or did you have to go back and get things ready?
I did. It was a few months before, and I convinced my brother David. He was like, mm-hmm. "You got to go see this place called Seattle," and he came out here with me, and he agreed that it was awesome. And maybe like 4 or 5 months later is when we moved out to Missoula with the intention of being there for a little while, mm-hmm. and to move out to Seattle. And we, you know, I think our parents kind of didn't believe it was going to happen until it actually happened. I never lived anywhere else other than Chattanooga and Knoxville, mm-hmm. for college. Mm-hmm. And
was that kind of scary making that move then?
It was a little bit scary. And looking back, I don't realize, I don't think I was as scared as I should have been, actually. I remember, you know, David and I kind of reflect on this all the time. At the time, I was 23 and he was 20. I remember getting out to Missoula and like not having enough money because at that age, I didn't know what to prepare for.
Mm-hmm.
I remember scraping change off of the trunk of our car to buy a bean burrito at Taco Bell, and just going for months without a job. And like,
yeah,
you know, it was rough for a while. It was definitely rough for a while.
Yeah.
I remember like not having enough money to get out to Seattle once we had decided to leave Missoula. We played this going away show with this band called the Oblio Joes in Missoula, and they like gave us all the money from the door, and like we used it to buy a U-Haul, and like,
uh-huh.
it was just like everything was by the seat of our pants, you know?
Right, right.
And it was kind of this adventure,
yeah.
which I would never do anymore without that kind of preparation, without right. more preparation.
How old were you?
I was 23, and I was... no, I think I was 22 when I got to Missoula.
Uh-huh.
And I was 23 when I left, but he was 19 when we got to Missoula. So
really?
Yeah, it's been, you know, a lot of our growing up has been in the Northwest.
Yeah, most of your adult years.
Yeah,
so far. Indeed. Yeah. So what's is it exciting to be a part of the Seattle music scene? What is it? What is it about the Seattle music scene that makes it good in your view?
Huh? Well, it's gone through a lot of changes in the last 7 years.
Uh-huh.
There have been different things that have made it good. I feel like in those smaller towns that we played in, you would always have like the buddy band,
mm-hmm.
That you always wanted to play a show with and you always wanted to hang out with and drink with afterwards. And it's been a little bit harder for us in Seattle to find that click, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that has to do with like what our band sounds like. We don't really fit into any kind of categories. The way I see it right now is there's like a lot of really cool like Americana and folk,
yeah,
and
yeah, totally
alt country acts, and then there's the more DIY kind of underground stuff, house shows and type, you know, mm-hmm. those type of bands. And we kind of like to do both of those. And honestly, like the band that we have meshed with the most is Blitz and Trapper, and they're in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew those guys before we moved out here. It's a weird scene.
Is it exciting to be a part of it?
Yeah, it's exciting to be a part of it. I wonder if other people would say that we're a part of it.
From my view, you are. I mean, you know, it. The music here, like most of the, when I first listened to you guys,
mm-hmm.
you know, most of the music coming out of the city right now is what you just said. It's a lot of Americana, folk, mm-hmm. indie pop. I would, you know, mm-hmm. kind of categorize it as that. And it's refreshing to hear something that's a little bit more rock, a little bit more melodic,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's, you know, That's what I grew up listening to, like what we were talking about before, you know, Pavement and
yeah,
and Sonic Youth, a little bit noisier.
Yeah, know? The way I've been describing it lately, especially with our new album's a little bit grungier than our earlier stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've been describing us as just a band full of Southerners.
Yeah,
in a town trying to play Seattle music.
Right,
that's
right.
Full of Seattleites trying to play Southern music.
That's great.
Those are actually the people that I gravitate towards as friends. Like
right.
most of my friends in the music scene are in like the Moondoggies and the Maldives, and
mm-hmm.
and I love those people. And they do it really well. And maybe one of the reasons I gravitate towards them is there's a nostalgic, like I feel like I'm hanging out with friends from back home.
Right, right.
But what we're doing, I don't really see where it fits in sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
I trust that fans do.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
Well, I hope so too. And you know, every chance I get, I've been telling people about you guys
because I
just love it. And I hope the future, you know, holds a lot of great things for you,
Thanks a
for
lot.
You guys. Yeah. So what's coming up? Tours? Are you guys going to do a tour in support of the
album? We're getting back today.
Uh-huh.
From
That's right.
From a little tour for like
See, you're so good. You're so good at that.
It's the whiskey that's helping me.
Right, right. It's the whiskey last night that's like really taking a toll on me right now.
Okay.
So that's why I'm just like sticking with coffee.
Your time travel device is not.
Yeah, yeah.
So we did a little Northwestern thing this weekend, just a mini tour with Marty from Blitz and Trapper.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we are working on a West Coast kind of greater West, Southwest kind of thing right now. It's in the works for later in the summer. And then we're hopefully going to be doing some festivals in August. Right now, the only thing on the books after this is, show in Portland. And then on June 1st, we'll be doing a show for Darren Schuller, who did our release show poster. He's an artist who's he's our favorite.
Nice.
And a bunch of bands that do shows that he does posters for, like The Pharmacy and I forget who else is on the bill, actually, but we'll be doing a show at Columbia City on June 1st.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
Excellent,
Columbia
man.
Columbia City Theater.
Well, it's been a real pleasure talking with you. I hope that someday we can hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
would you like that?
I would love that. You'll have my phone number.
Wonderful.
1-800.
Wonderful. All right. 555.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a real treat talking with you guys. I love the album.
Can't say
enough of good stuff about it. So please go out and buy this thing. You can get it on your Bandcamp site, right?
Yeah.
And let's pimp your wares here. Where can we find out more about
QuietOnesMusic.com?
Okay.
Is kind of the central piece of our web presence. But you'll be able to find the record.
It'll be in stores.
Any digital outlet, stores in Seattle. You can order it. You can order the physical merch through our Bandcamp.
Wonderful.
And yeah.
Awesome, man. And you have a Twitter?
Yeah. I don't know the URL, but it's on our website.
We'll plug it. We'll plug it on our website as well. You can go to www.air-raid.net. And check that out and just click on the links that we have hyperlinked in the blog posting. Let's see, anything coming up for us? Oh, you can follow me on Twitter, at Air Raid Net, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, all the places that you find your social media at these days. And we'd love your support. So with that said, let's do this. I had some time to look up what I was trying to say about the 420 show up at the Anchor Pub for the Everett Music Initiative. And we've got two free tickets to the Young Evils show coming up on 420. And let's see, how should we do this, John?
How should we do what?
How should we give away these tickets?
For the Young Evils show?
Yeah, yeah. Go.
It could have been nice to do something at the Young Evil show that was a few days ago, but considering how we're past that at this point.
Yeah, yeah. That's in the past.
Is it a contest? Is it like a...
I don't know. We just got two free tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just put two free tickets in the subject heading and email me, aaron@air-raid.net, and the first two people that email me will get a free ticket and, free two tickets, right? Two free tickets.
It's a little boring, but it works.
It works. We'll do that. All right, guys. Thanks for listening this week. Let's see. Let's go out with the song Obvious Lately. Did I say that right?
You said it exactly
okay,
right.
Okay, perfect. The Quiet Ones. Molt in Moments. Go get it. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next time.